Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus on Albany. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and my guest today, and I'm waiting for him to come on the line, is Alan Bedenko. And Alan is going to talk about the legal troubles of sweet pigeons. So we'll be just a minute or two before he comes on the line. I'm trying to reach him.
Good morning, Selman Kiefer.
Yes, Alan, please, we're on the air.
Hold on one moment.
Thank you. It'll just be a minute, folks. So we're going to talk about issues in Buffalo and what's going on with the system. So Alan will be on in a minute.
Hello? Sorry,
hey,
about
Alan,
that.
That's okay. We're on the air right now. So, Alan, you're in Buffalo, and there's been issues with Steve Pigeon and Buffalo. So tell everybody what's going on out in Buffalo.
Okay. So to the uninitiated, I know you have a sort of a statewide audience. Steve Pigeon is a Democratic operative who was instrumental along with, spending Tom Golisano's money in bringing about the Senate coup about 5 years ago that gave him a cush job in the state Senate as counsel to Pedro Espada. Locally here in Buffalo, Pigeon is known not only for that, but instigating a similar coup in our county legislature about 6 months later. And also for being, you know, he's a former chairman of the Erie County Democratic Committee. He was ousted in around 2002 for a variety of reasons that we don't need to get into. But ever since then, he's been on sort of this mission to get his revenge against Democratic headquarters. And he has spent a lot of time, effort, money skating along the edges of the election law in order to sabotage people who were duly endorsed by Democratic headquarters in primaries. And that was for, you know, local elections, county elections, state elections, you name it. His playing fast and loose with the regulations and the law eventually caught up to him, and there were complaints made by former district attorney, assistant district attorney Mark Sasha, to the Moreland Commission, and also to the Board of Elections here, and those were sent to Albany to be investigated by the Moreland Commission and also by the Attorney General. And then when the Moreland Commission was disbanded, those allegations were then picked up by Preet Bharara's office. So there's been a joint federal and state investigation into the dealings of Steve Pigeon and his associates now for well over a year that culminated at first in a raid that took place in late May of last year that then led to further investigations that finally led to the first indictment and the first conviction arising out of this investigation. Steve Pigeon was indicted, I believe it was on nine counts involving things like bribery and soliciting improper governmental services. I think there was one there that was quite juicy, where it was grand larceny by extortion. And a Supreme Court Justice, John Michalik, was indicted, convicted, took a plea, lost his judgeship, is likely to lose his law license, and was convicted on two or three counts involving bribery. to make a long story short, how they got to that point is when the raids were conducted back in May of 2015, the investigators found all of Steve Pigeon's various sent and received emails, and they have been combing through those, and they have led to further investigations that go beyond the original election law allegations, and led, in this case, to what really seems like it was kind of low-hanging fruit, a simple cut-and-dry case of trading favors with a judge in exchange for promises to try to get the judge's relative a job. And what the judge did, and he memorialized it in these emails, was he seems to have fixed at least one case in Steve Pigeon's favor, thus, you know, calling into question the integrity of the court itself. And, you know, this was all over, you know, promises from Steve Pigeon that he would try to find this judge's relative a job, which he, I think, ultimately did with some national campaign of some sort, and, you know, in exchange for things like box seats at a Sabres game. So the judge was bought, and he was bought relatively cheaply, unfortunately, in this case. So that's it in a nutshell.
Okay, now, two questions. What's Pigeon's relationship with Andrew Cuomo, and what is Pigeon's relationship with the Senate Democrats?
If Pigeon has a relationship with the Senate Democrats at this point, I'd be very surprised. I think that he kind of made himself persona non grata in the Democratic caucus after basically handing a Democratic majority over to the Republicans on a silver platter 5 years ago with the help of Tom Golisano and his millions with respect to the PAC that was known as Responsible New York. So I don't think that there's a whole hell of a lot of love lost between Steve Pigeon and the Democratic caucus in the state Senate. As far as Pigeon's relationship to Cuomo, I think it was once reasonably good. He was certainly promoting himself to the local newspaper political columnist as being very, very close to the governor. The extent to which that is true is now very much up in the air. I mean, I'm sure if you asked Governor Cuomo about Steve Pigeon, he would try to distance himself as far as possible from him. But a year or two ago, it was a much different tune. And I remember I published a story 2 or 3 years ago about an incident that was taking place in Niagara Falls. And Pigeon had inserted himself in a city council race backing this particular candidate who was trying to put the kibosh on a deal that Cuomo was putting together with a developer locally named Mark Hamister to build a hotel. Actually, they just had the groundbreaking for that hotel yesterday in Niagara Falls. But at the time, this councilman who Pigeon was backing was arguing that the deal to transfer the land for that hotel over to this developer was somehow improper or something that he wouldn't support. And I had heard from at least three people who were present and heard the conversation that the governor saw Pigeon at a Bills game, at a reception for a Bills game, and said to him something along the lines of, you know, stay out of my business in Niagara Falls, or, you know, get your, you know, don't queer the deal up in Niagara Falls for me, or something along those lines. Basically, admonishing Pigeon not to mess with the governor's efforts to get this hotel deal done. And Pigeon actually, for the first time, I think, he responded to me on Twitter and showed, and he posted a picture, and the picture was Pigeon with his nephew, who was like an infant or a toddler, with the governor, all smiles at this tent at the Bills game. Behind him is Sam Hoyt, who works for the governor. He's a former assemblyman. And behind, I think, the governor's shoulder was Gene Kakamise, who was head of the Bricklayers Union out in Rochester, who was implicated ultimately as having, you know, been involved in some way in one of the PACs that Pigeon was using in 2013 to screw around with headquarters candidates. And Pidgeon was denying that there was any such acrimony between himself and the governor, and posted this happy picture of them all to indicate that, to underscore the point that there was no bad blood between Pidgeon and the governor. And again, the reason why that was important for Pidgeon was to keep up appearances. You know, he was trying to, you know, when he wasn't busy sabotaging Democratic elections here in Erie County in Western New York, he was promoting his business as a lobbyist, which I think last year it was Poppy LLC, P-A-P-I, that he ran in conjunction with a lawyer from Niagara Falls. And ultimately, the three or four contracts that they had listed with J. Cope were all terminated shortly after the joint FBI and state police raids in May of 2015. But, you know, the more that Pidgeon could promote himself as being close to the governor, the better it was for Pidgeon, the better it was for his, you know, fledgling lobbying gigs, and the better it was for him to kind of say, listen, I'm the guy who has the governor's ear from Western New York, not Jeremy Zellner, the chairman of the Erie County Democrats. It's me. So if you got to get to the governor, you got to go through me, not through Zellner. And ultimately, that blew up in his face. But at the time, it was, you know, for some people, a compelling argument.
Now, you use the word sabotaging. You know, anybody who follows state government knows that the governor is dragging his feet on helping the Senate regain the majority in the House. In the New York State Senate. So what's the difference between what Pidgeon has done, what Jeff Klein has done, and what Cuomo is doing?
Well, you know, I got to confess, I don't follow the state Senate that closely, first of all, because, you know, it doesn't really affect my day-to-day existence in Western New York, and also because I think the state Senate is a vestigial body that we don't need anymore, that serves no legitimate purpose. But I'll take the question this way. As far as what Jeff Klein does, basically, you know, caucusing with the Republicans, I'm sure there's some kind of quid pro quo there. I wouldn't. The sabotage I'm talking about is electoral sabotage within the context of a primary campaign, where you have a candidate who is completely qualified, and a, you know, loyal Democrat who is ready, willing, and able to serve the public and is running a campaign. And then all of a sudden, literally at the last minute, the MO is this: at the last minute, on the last day or week before the primary campaign is held, some huge amount of money is spent on literature, and homes are barraged by negative literature against the endorsed candidate, and positive literature on behalf of this sort of insurgent candidate who everybody knows to be associated in some way with Pidgeon and his cohorts. And no one ever knows where the money came from. The money is seldom released or disclosed prior to the lit hitting people's homes. It's usually done in a shady kind of way by some kind of PAC or unauthorized committee, authorized committee that nobody knows about. But the amounts of money that this requires are simply staggering, and they oftentimes far outweigh any kind of money that the endorsed candidate is able to come up with, even through any legitimate means. So that's the kind of sabotage I'm talking about. I'm not talking about, I'm an elected Democrat from Long Island, and I decide that for whatever reason I'm going to caucus with the Republicans and take away a Democratic majority, or, you know, I'm Andrew Cuomo and I am making a lot of mouth noises about supporting Democrats and a Democratic majority in the state Senate, but when the rubber hits the road, I'm not going to do a whole hell of a lot to actually have that happen, or to help Democrats get elected, or to help Democrats regain the majority. You know, that's a different kind of sabotage than what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is more nefarious. It's more unfair. And like I said, it skates around the edges of the election law, because if it's highly unusual for some kind of unknown, obscure political action committee or political committee of any sort to suddenly come up with literally hundreds of thousands of dollars practically overnight in order to destroy the candidacy of a Democrat running for office whose only sin in the eyes of that committee are that they're endorsed by the duly elected executive board and chairman of the Democratic committee. That to me is the egregious illegality that's been taking place ever since, and probably even before, Steve Pidgeon was ousted as party committee chair.
Now, how did he rise in politics? How long has he been noted to be a mover and shaker in Western New York?
Pidgeon, probably, you know, I only moved here in 2001, and it surely predates that. I know that he became the chairman of the party in the late 90s. He was associated with the then Democratic Erie County executive, Dennis Gorski. So he kind of rose in the ranks under Gorski and under a prior chairman, Sorrentino. So it goes back at least to the late 80s into the 90s that he started making his bones. And, you know, listen, I mean, he's... The thing that's so conflicting about Steve Pidgeon is that, you know, on the macro end of everything, he is a Democrat, and he believes in a lot of the same things that everybody else believes in who's a Democrat in Western New York. And he believes in those types of, you know, progressive things that Democrats seek to attain for our society. It's the micro things. When you really examine the ways in which he gains and accumulates power, and all of it having to do with, quite frankly, either patronage positions for his cronies or consulting gigs or similar, you know, ancillary campaign enrichment for other cronies. You know, like who's getting the lit jobs, who's getting the media buys. You know, every time you run a campaign in this way and you have hundreds of thousands of dollars at your disposal, you know, there's a lot of people who can make some good money off of that come August and September. And he was very good at maintaining good relationships with vendors and other people who, you know, operate around the fringes of, you know, annual campaign activity. He could spread around the wealth, and so he had a lot of people who were very, and still are, very loyal to him. So that's kind of what he's been reduced to, though, in recent years, is just that.
Now, Mark Sasha, who I briefly met when there were Moreland Commission hearings here in Albany, and he's now running for DA. If he wins, how important is that?
Well, I mean, if he wins, it's important for at least two reasons that I can think of off the top of my head. One is there's absolutely no question that he's a very capable and competent district attorney and prosecutor. So, I mean, in terms of you know, the DA's office being run in a competent way, there's no problem there. Number two, if people agree that district election law and public integrity investigations and prosecutions should be taking place at the county level rather than waiting for Albany to pick up the slack or waiting for Preet Bharara to pick up the slack, then Mark Sasha winning would not only vindicate a lot of what he's gone through, he lost his job over this kind of stuff. But you know, there's absolutely no question that if he were to win and become district attorney, that these things would happen, and that they would happen at the county level, and that there would be a vigorous public integrity and election law investigatory body within the district attorney's office. Of course, what you know, what you tack onto that is there are actually three Democrats now running for district attorney. Sasha is one of them. The other is John Flynn. He's been endorsed. And the third is the current interim DA, Mike Flaherty, who is surrounded by people who are close to Pigeon. And the irony there is that Flaherty has actually brought one of the first election law violations or criminal investigations, prosecutions, that have happened in recent years, and that arises out of some Tea Party dummy up in Grand Island who didn't live there anymore but tried to vote there, or actually did vote there anyway, and lied on a provisional ballot, an affidavit ballot, saying that he lived where he didn't live, allegedly. So everybody's kind of on this whole public integrity kick because it's in vogue right now. It's like the Pokemon Go of prosecutorial priorities. But so I think, you know, I think no matter who wins, it'll be an issue. But the fact that it is sort of it's becoming the central campaign theme definitely inures here to Sasha's favor. Because he was there before, not before anybody else, but that is his thing. That is his baby. And no one has pushed it harder than he, and he lost his job over it. And so he has sacrificed personally and professionally in the name of public integrity, and that says a lot.
Now, overall, what's going on in Buffalo with the, you know, indictment of Pigeon and Sasha running for DA? What's the implication statewide for all of this?
Well, statewide, I don't know. I don't know the degree to which politics are as dirty in other places as they are here. I'm sure they are. I just don't know about it. But I mean, for our purposes, you know, this investigation into Steve Pigeon, if it goes in the directions that are being rumored, and that's all we're left with at this point, is we know that the judge has been convicted. We know that Pigeon is under indictment for pretty much the same exact set of facts. But other than that, we don't know what other fruit has fallen off of the tree of the overall investigation into Pigeon's dealings. So we don't know what else is out there. And when Schneiderman came to town a week or so ago, he and a guy from the FBI made it very crystal clear that there are more investigations pending and that there is more to come. So this isn't the end of it. So we know that. As far as how that's going to play out statewide, to the extent that there are similar shenanigans being played out in other counties or in other constituencies, hopefully this puts an end to it, or at least puts people on notice that this sort of stuff is going to be taken a little bit more seriously. Certainly one could say that public integrity and corruption in Albany is at the forefront of most people's minds, at least in the minds of people who pay attention to this stuff, which quite frankly isn't that deep of a well. But for the people who pay attention, public integrity is a big deal. And the extent to which there is corruption, whether it's in Albany or at the county level or at any level of government throughout New York, people in politics should be forewarned that these things will be investigated, and that if there are allegations or evidence of criminality, that criminality will be prosecuted. Because part of what enabled a guy like Steve Pigeon to get away with what he got away with for so long is that there was nobody willing to prosecute. When things were brought to the district attorney's attention, they were shunted by the wayside. For attorneys general, you know, this is kind of small potatoes stuff. When you're talking about, oh, you know, this PAC raised a lot of money and nobody really knows how they got it, and their filings are kind of wishy-washy and we don't exactly know if they're on the level. You know, this isn't the same as, you know, massive corporate fraud or, you know, a murder. You know, obviously there are bigger fish to fry and bigger priorities for prosecutors to chase down. For, you know, not to mention, you know, federal prosecutors who have a completely different set of rules and laws that they operate under. And the extent to which these election law violations of New York State regulations and laws, they don't even rise to the level of federal prosecution at all. So, but now with this revised sort of examination into corruption in New York and the federalization of some of these things, some of these issues, and a renewed sense from prosecutors at the county, state, and federal level that public integrity is something worth fighting for and something worth protecting, and violations of it are something worth prosecuting, I think that will be good for all New Yorkers, and hopefully we see more of this, not less.
Now, this is a saga that's going to continue. So as it unfolds, I'd like to have you back on Focus on Albany to talk about it. But please plug your blog and what else you're doing.
Thank you so much. I write for a weekly independent news weekly here in Buffalo called The Public, which is at dailypublic.com. And I tweet at Buffalo Pundit. And also I have a Facebook page too under the same name. But, you know, as this stuff happens, as this stuff comes up, I'll definitely be writing more about it. But yeah, dailypublic.com is where you can find most of my newest stuff.
Great. You've been listening to Alan Fedenko, and he's been talking about Steve Pigeon and other things that are happening in Buffalo. So if you like this program, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. You could download on your smartphone. And if you have a comment about this show, hashtag Focus on Albany on Twitter and share it with Alan. Thank you for taking the time, and we shall talk later. So have a good day, Alan, and have a good day, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.